BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I meet all kinds of interesting people at football games. I'm walking through the parking lot. I see people at the tailgate. Get inside the stadium. I talk with fans. I was down on the sideline at Husky Stadium a couple seasons ago. Oregon was playing Washington, as people may remember. And I was struck by a guy who was standing on the Oregon sideline. But I was curious, like, what is his association with Oregon? And Scott Ligo introduced himself. We shook hands. Turns out he's the stepfather of the University of Oregon special teams coach Joe Lorig. And he's also a coach himself. He coached in college, coached in high school, went to the University of Washington. Yeah, it's a very complex game for Scott Ligo when Oregon's playing Washington. He's now running a nonprofit that helps student athletes and parents navigate the NCAA eligibility, navigate recruiting. Become an advocate for youth sports. I think it's an interesting position to be in. He saw the video I posted of the basketball melee, and he texted me about it. Because I think there's a lot of problems in youth sports. And we got to texting about it, and I just said, why don't you come on the show at 4 o'clock, and we'll talk about it more, and we'll talk about how complex his relationship is with the Washington-Oregon game. So joining us now, Scott Ligo, who is the founder of an organization that helps kids navigate the sports experience, former high school and college coach, now running Student Athlete Advocates. Scott Ligo joining us. How complex is that for you, coach, when you got Oregon and Washington playing?
Well, to be perfectly blunt with you, John, it's even more complicated than people realize, because I was on the staff of Washington in that famous Kenny Wheaton game. I was in the press box, and so when I take the elevator up to Joe's office, there is a little picture of Kenny intercepting that pass, so it's a deep harbored situation, trust me.
A deep harbor, I like that. I like that. Hey, so what was that like to be part of that staff and be at the game and Kenny Wheaton's going to score and all that happens? And, you know, you're watching it from probably, you know, relative silence in that coaching box.
Yeah. Well, the funny part is, if people remember the old Austin Stadium, we were an outside box.
Okay.
So people could see us and talk and definitely point their fingers at us. So it was a lot of apprehension. It's actually, you know, two parts of their funny parts of that whole day, none of it being the interception or the throw on the goal line, especially when you have a running back named Napoleon Kaufman that we thought we should have probably ran the ball with. You know, at halftime, my job was to bring the stats to Coach Lambright, and what ended up happening was I couldn't get out of Austin Stadium at halftime. I just couldn't get back to the locker room. So I had to climb a chain-link fence, and as I'm climbing the chain-link fence, my fine pants that they had given me split over on the backside.
No.
So now I'm having to deal with that. I've got a sweater around my waistline, running the stats to Coach Lambright, get that done. Then we lose the game, and I'm on the field after the game, and the fans are on there, and the Oregon fans were telling me what they thought of me, and the worst part was actually the goalposts were shaking pretty heavily and were about to come down, and I was trying to make sure I was not going to get taken out by the goalposts and make my day that much worse than it already had been. So split pants, almost, you know, get taken out by goalposts and lose the game was not a fun day. So it wasn't fun. But
Kenny Wheaton would say that he, you know, he's come on the show and he said he was anticipating it because, you know, that throw had been made several times in kind of goal line situations. When that call goes in and you're in the coaching staff, like, was there anybody going, you know, is there time for anybody, I guess, to say Napoleon should be getting the ball, or does it all happen so fast that, you know, you don't really have time to process that?
Well, if I'm being honest, the GAs all looked at each other, and we couldn't believe we were making that call. We didn't have the authority or the ability to really say anything, so we just go with the call that's been called. And so we were kind of shocked by the call, and as I say, the rest is history. But, yeah, it's there's some moments like that when you're up in the booth, but, you know, there's also, you know, times when you don't think something's going to work and it works great. So, you know, it's a learning process as a young coach, too, so it works both ways.
I have to ask you about your stepson, and Joe Lorig, the special teams coach at Oregon, for people who don't know, is stepson here of our guest. And what is it like to see it now and see a guy kind of doing what you did and, you know, on the platform that Oregon's doing it?
Oh, it's you know, very, to be honest with you, it's a proud moment for me personally, you know, to see Joe's career from starting from Western Oregon University to landing, coming back to his home, you know, Pacific Northwest, and being at Oregon and being with the guy that he coached with before, Coach Lanning, and what they've been able to accomplish the last couple of years, and have an opportunity, you know, to be in the playoff this year. You know, we won't talk about the Rose Bowl, but, you know, yeah, proud of the heck is what he's done and what he's accomplished. I've known where he came from and where he started, and, you know, just he's got a good head on him about the game and understanding, you know, what the importance is. And, you know, we were just talking about a few minutes before I came on here. He played a prank on the players for April Fool's. You know, I mean, just, you know, he gets it, and he has fun with it, and he's enjoying it, which is great. And most importantly, his wife's from Klamath Falls, and his mom is, you know, a five-hour drive away. So we have some happy customers around here.
Scott Ligo, our guest, founder of the Student Athlete Advocates Organization. It's a nonprofit. You're working with high school kids. You're working with college kids. Tell us what you're doing.
So I started this program, John, when I was back at Garfield High School here in Seattle, for where Brandon Roy's from and Isaiah Stanback. And I was just noticing at that time, that, you know, this is going to age the whole situation, but that was the 2.3 or Take a Knee initiative was started by the NCAA, which morally was mostly about your GPA requirements and sliding scale with the SAT, to now where it's morphed to where it is today. And, you know, what people don't really realize is that, and I figured this out when I was at Garfield, it was going through the gentrification period in Seattle, and it's a very academic school, and all my counselors, and they're great people. This is not a shot at counselors and high school counselors at all, but, you know, I bring my athlete, and then he was, you know, Prop 48, what they called at that time, at Eastern Oregon, or Eastern Washington, and I started saying about eligibility center and stuff like that, and they thought I was speaking a foreign language, and that's when the bells went off. And Joe and I have talked over in the past, you know, he says they need more people in buildings to really help these kids, and the counselors, again, their job is to get kids through really through high school. It's not to get them to really college. That's secondary, and so a student athlete kind of gets put in the real back burner, and to really understand the process. You know, I know you've been around long enough. When I started, it was only a red shirt, and now we got five different kinds of shirts, right? And so it's just understanding the different processes and how they all work, and they're different. And now we've added the word NIL. You know, it's trickling down into the high school. I mean, I'm sure you saw where Modern Day is getting paid $1 million now, you know, in their program, for their athletic program, from a company that's, you know, investing in them. So, you know, where is this going, and what are we doing with it? And, you know, a lot of parents, it's really about education, about understanding the process. And there's just, unfortunately, there's, you know, some organizations, companies out there that, you know, basically prey on these kids and the dream of getting a scholarship. And let's be honest, the reality is it's about 7%. And like I said to you earlier today, about the 2%, the top guys, I don't have to help those guys. Those guys are going to get a scholarship. But the other 98%, they're going to Lynn Fields and Lewis and Clark's and George Fox's. Those are the schools that those kids need to understand. And what the difference between a D2 and a D3 is, and it's a big, and what people really don't realize, especially on the West Coast, there's only two D2 schools left on the whole West Coast. That's Western Oregon and Central Washington. So the opportunities for young people is less. And in the last year, in the last 3 years, the Power Four has taken about 525 less high school players at that level. So it's a trickle-down effect. And, you know, I know that Western Oregon and Central Washington are claiming this is probably the best class that they've had in years, because they're getting a lot of kids that are just bouncing down them because there's not a lot of opportunities in the next level, you know, the levels.
Yeah, there's a bottleneck there, and I did, you know, really starting with the pandemic, started to hear from high school kids who said, hey, there's just no place for me. I'm going to have to go, you know, play in the big sky instead of playing, you know, in a G5 school, or maybe go to a community college. What do you tell those kids, Scott, you know, as when they come to you?
Well, the bottom line nowadays, John, is it's almost like you have to go down to go back up. I mean, this is all sports. I mean, I follow pretty hard: baseball, softball, soccer, women's and men's. I mean, it's any of these sports. Is that sometimes you may have to take a lesser thing that you think your abilities are, and then go, you know, maybe you track a game and you're playing, you know, X school and they liked you a lot, and, you know, unfortunately we both know that there's probably a little bit of tampering going on out there, and they like you, and they're going to come out and they're going to say, hey, you know, let's be honest, recruiting is not an exact science. If that was that easy, then, you know, the major programs would have no problems, and they'd just be able to get everything. But, if, you know, as you watch the NCAA basketball tournament that's going on right now, you know, guys are leaving left and right. We're in the middle of a tournament. Indiana does not have a roster for basketball right now. There's nobody in the program, and it's an open job. I mean, would you want to take that job? I mean, you start the interview with the AD, and you say, so we have no guards, no centers, no forwards. So what do I do now? I mean, you know, and what's my NIL money going to look like, and where are we going to be in this thing? So it's a really interesting times, sadly, you know, and a lot of people didn't realize in the summer, the NCAA did, this is a great example I always use, the NCAA wanted to act like they were doing something good, so they increased the number of scholarships. So baseball is a great example. I've never understood, to be honest with you, 11.7 Division I baseball scholarships. And there's a program down in Oregon State that's pretty good at baseball, right? So 11.7, you need a few players to play. You need 40 is what the roster says. So they can have 40. Well, the NCAA said, well, what we're going to do now is we're going to give you 34 full scholarships. Well, that's number one. Is the school committed to doing the 34? That's number one. And if they are, are they going to do the same thing? Are they going to parse those out? So now they went to 34. So now you have to get rid of 6 kids on your roster. Well, you have to do the math. Then you look at that 6 kids, and there's about 300 Division I baseball players. That's another 1,800 kids that are going into the portal, besides the baseball players that are coming out this year. And I understand baseball is a little bit different. You can go to draft. You can do those different things. But, again, it's a numbers game that's playing against you. And until this house settlement gets figured out, I don't know what those numbers are really going to look like for those kids. Is it really going to be all those numbers? It's supposed to be like 19 for track scholarships. Hmm. Oregon's got a good track program. I mean, are they going to fully fund 19? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I saw a statistic a couple of days ago, 78% of the kids on a college campus, 22% of the kids on the college campus are going to get 78% of the funds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's lopsided.
How does that math work out? And so, you know, really, I mean, you know, we can have a debate whether the Olympic sports or whatever you want to term them, non-headcount sports are, you know, justifiable, whatever you want to say. But the bottom line is they still are an expense, and you still need to figure out how to pay for them. And really, are you going to be able to fully fund these things? And I'm concerned that there won't be fully funding, and there will be a lot of less kids being able to play. And if we really want to go back to the original intent of what college athletic was about, about kids getting an education, getting them through, maybe changing a life, doing those things, I think we're kind of missing the point. But I don't get paid the big money to figure those things out. So I hope they figure it out.
You get a chance to talk to a lot of high school athletes about college recruiting and being a student athlete, and I think probably some of it is eye opening for them. But what do you tell parents and kids who come to you and say, Coach, you know, we think our kid's good enough to be a scholarship athlete. What kinds of things do they need to be focused on? Because they're going to get hit left and right. Scouting services, pay us for this. Help us make a video to showcase your kid. Oh, we can get you to these tournaments. What do you tell those parents and those kids?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, youth sports and that whole world is now, like they say, $93 billion industry. So it just shows you where the kind of money that's out there. What I generally tell them, John, is the bottom line is it is about talent. If you have the talent, the ability to have, and you have to be realistic. Are you a Division I? I mean, I use track as a good example. You know, kids that run a pretty good fast time, blah, 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 and then all of a sudden I take them down to SEC track or, you know, Arizona State track times for the 100 meters, and I said, now how do you compare to that? And the silence in the room gets pretty quick. right? Yeah. And then a cross-country kid, I said, well, how do you compare to these top cross-country guys in the NCAA? And that's when they kind of hit, if it figures out a little bit for them. Again, I'm not a dream dasher. I'm here to educate, like, these are the things you need to think about, how to do it. I've always tell people, like, if you have a top school you'd love to go to, I'll put that on the list. But be realistic. You know, Joe always talks about this in recruiting, have the 500-mile rule. 500 miles from your home, there's got to be a school there that somewhere that you could go play. And figure that out, piece out. And Pacific Northwest, a good example. Go to a Boise, which is, Power 5, but, Power 4 type team. Portland State, go to Central Washington. They all offer different things, how you fit in. What do you see? And as I always tell kids this, if you leave the sport or the sport happens to leave you, you're not happy with the coaching change or whatever those things that happen, can you see yourself living in that community for the rest of your, college career and getting the degree you want? If you can't, then that's not the spot for you. If it's just about, and I'm not unrealistic, John. I mean, you look at the Finley, the kid that's going to be at Tulane this year, their fifth school in 5 years. Kids can move. I get all that stuff. You can transfer and all that. That's absolutely 1,000% your prerogative to do those things. But at the end of the day, I would like to ask about the academic progress of that young man and see how close he is to his degree or not close enough to his degree, and is he doing the right things. And, I saw a guy today got his seventh year out of one of the schools as a seven-footer. I don't know what we're doing. Cam McCormick's a great, great example, from Oregon and now ends up at Miami. He's running a 40 time at 27 years old for the pro day. I don't know if we're doing all the right things. But, here nor there, again, it's the present-day market. You got to figure that piece out and where you fit in. And, and now we have the Pavia deal with the JUCOs. That's not set in stone, but we both know that once the presidents get set, it kind of sets itself up. And I've seen about two or three Division II scholarship athletes challenging from their perspective sports, baseball and stuff. And if you've noticed anything in the courts right now when it comes to student athletes, they're winning. And so they're probably going to win this thing. And so now you add another layer where a kid can go down to the JUCO level, do a couple years there, not have a count, and he comes into the system, and now he's 22, 21. Well, what do you think your coach is going to take? And he's going to take film. And that's something that parents need to really understand, especially the high school kids, is that when the recruiting happens for a kid that's in the portal, it's such a different recruitment because they have verifiable information from college tape that this kid can play, or they're going to take a chance on some 17-year-old kid that they hope grows, gets bigger, maybe matures and does the things, and really can end up being that player. It's pretty simple for the college coach to say, well, I'm going to go this route. And, Patino's already said it. I'm not recruiting next year any high school kids.
Our guest,
pretty simple where the buck is.
Scott Ligo, our guest, he is the founder of Student Athlete Advocates, high school and college coach. He is now doing some coaching in the recruiting space. Let me ask you a couple things here. One, I saw recently the state of Washington is pursuing girls. Is it flag football? That's going to become a big thing. Like, where do you stand on that?
Oh, I'm 1,000% in. I mean, I actually sat in a meeting with Mario Bailey from the Seahawks. He kind of explained the whole thing. They've given about $400,000 Seahawks have to seed money to get programs up and running, which is great. But he says, we can't sustain this for the duration of getting flag football. The problem with the WIA, and it's kind of a state thing, the east side, because right now the season is going to be in the winter. So the east side, the ADs can say, well, we don't know if we can get a season in because of the snow issues and weather and things like that. The west side guys think they can do it, which then in my head, I'm thinking, well, let's just move it to spring. I mean, I'm thinking it's a pretty easy thing to do. I don't know if that's going to get done. I hope it does. It's the fastest growing market out there by far. I mean, they're even giving college scholarships. It's going to be in the Olympics. They have to address this thing in our state and have it figured out. But there is an east side, west side, kind of the mountains of the dividing line in the field. And hopefully some smart minds can come to an agreement and figure this out. I mean, maybe the east side people do theirs in the spring and the west side do it, and then they can make an arbitrary game at the end of the year right before the end of the year, and they can play the state championship game. I don't know what the answer is, but there's got to be some kind of solution.
Yeah, girls flag football in the state of Oregon, the OSAA has basically greenlit the approval of as a sport. Now the challenge is they've got to find, you know, they've got to find enough schools to play it. They have 2 years in the state of Oregon to get from 32 teams to 50 teams to become a fully sanctioned sport. So they're trying to get it done in Washington as well. I'd love to see this. There's a lot of enthusiasm there. And before I let you go, though, Scott, let me ask you about youth sports in general, because I posted that video. I think you saw it. It's an ugly scene at a basketball game. You know, a lot of people saying adults are ruining the sports. What is happening on the youth sports level from your view?
Well, again, that kind of goes back to my opinion on the dollar amount. I mean, $93 billion in youth sports. It's literally just railroading over what this intent is for. And I've, you know, lately I've had a couple personal stories with my grandson who's playing baseball, and you know, he's 10 years old, and the coach is telling him if he doesn't hit better, that he's not going to be in the lineup. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, he's 10 years old. Just let him get up there and swing away. If he misses, he misses, and he'll get better. And that's how you learn and get better from the game. So seeing that purview has been very frustrating. I think, unfortunately, the adults are ruining it. I think that it kind of, it's the conundrum that I do with student-athlete advocates. You know, I don't, you know, I just flat out tell parents up front, listen, I'm not an agent, I'm not a service. I'm not going to get your kid a scholarship. I'm going to educate you on the process. What you do with it is how you make it happen. It's on your end. If your son's 4'1", wants to play for the center for the UCLA basketball team, there's not much I can do. I can tell you how you can get the coach's attention, but I'm just telling you that's on that end. But to answer your point, you know, unfortunately, you know, even the phone is involved in this. You know, we see scenes like this much more often. And was it happening all the time? I probably was. But now it's on camera. It's being seen. It's being seen thousands of times. It's creating all these, you know, comments in the comment chats and things like that. And we so unfortunately see a lot of ugly pieces from that too. But sadly, it's you know, we've taken the way the game from the kids. And you know, I know that down there, I told you about John O'Sullivan, who's done Changing the Game project down there out of Bend, Oregon, and he does great work. And then just give the game back to the kids. Let's let them have fun and enjoy it. Grow, they, you know, at 14, 15, I think we need to take the long-term athletic development model where we, you know, start kids and let them have fun and get old. And then 14, 15, when they start to show some development, some real enthusiasm for that sport, then maybe start to, you know, positioning them to be more into that singular sport. But in the most time, let sport sampling and let them have fun. And it really is that part for me, to be quite frank and honest, is my, you know, three children can afford to take my grandchildren and let them play sports. A lot of people, parents can't do it. And so how many kids aren't being given the exposure to having fun and maybe could be good, you know, soccer players or baseball, basketball players? I mean, I don't know all those answers, but I do know that a lot of kids are just getting forced out. And, you know, they say 65% of kids quit sports at age 13 because they weren't having fun. I think that's a pretty clear standard of what we're at in this situation. And I think we just need to do a better job of it. And I think that what you posted was good. I think there's a lot of pieces to the whole thing. I'm going to hold back with my judgment because I don't want you to get 900, you know, hate calls in the next, you know, hour for your show. But my point is, there was a lot of issues. There was, you know, there was a race issue, you know, African-American, white parents, opposite people touching each other. I mean, it was just, there's all kinds of things, the issues with the sport itself, the aggressiveness. You know, 2 days ago I saw, they said this first grade AAU basketball game became heated. I mean, why is that even on any social media? That should never be on, and I don't even understand how it even got to that point, to be even the first graders to be that heated. So I hope that, you know, we can have some open dialogue and conversations about these things. I know a lot of people that are out there trying to push for these things, especially like in your state of Oregon and up here in Washington, they're trying to bring some sanity back to the game and give it back to the kids and let them, you know, have fun with it. And, you know, some of my greatest memories was growing up was playing athletes. I'd still get together with three of my classmates from first grade. And we always talked about the great experiences we had when we were playing sports when we were younger. And none of us made it to the NBA or NFL, but we, you know, we're still friends 60 years later. So I think it shows what can happen if you do it the right way.
Scott Lego, thank you. I appreciate your wisdom.
I appreciate you, John, and thanks for everything you're doing.
Thank you. There he goes. He's now coaching students who are looking into recruiting. longtime high school coach, college coach, and his stepson, Joe Lorig, is the special teams coach at the University of Oregon. So good stuff there from LIGO. Keep an eye on girls flag football. State of Oregon voted to accept girls flag football as an emerging activity last October. The OSAA, the governing body of high school athletics in the state of Oregon, will consider it for an officially sanctioned sport at the end of a two-year period. They're really going to just study numbers. Is there enough interest? Are there enough schools that want to participate? I think this could be big. State of Washington, about 2 weeks away from voting on whether or not they will sanction girls flag football. Future of football might be girls football. Leave it here.